Everyone, if you can come in, I literally am, I've got 50 minutes more with our contracted time. And I am going to feed you. I swear if it takes till midnight, I'll... That's a threat. Okay, I want you to use your imaginations, which is easy for Unity folk to do. I'm going to ask my friend up there at the control panel to make me just a little bit hotter on the mic so I don't have to strain my voice. Thank you. That did it. The thing that I want you to imagine is right here in front of this lectern, I have a huge glass drinking jug. You know, a mountain valley drinking jug off of a water cooler. Now you can see this, can't you? The mountain valley water jug is right here. Now all the labels are removed so that you can look through the jug. And to your surprise, when you're looking through the jug, you see inside of the jug is a live goose. And he is mad at Howard. How can Howard leave him here in this jug and go on a cruise? He wants out of this jug. So since Howard's not here, it's up to us. Now, this live goose is in there. The only opening in this jug is up the long neck and right here at the top. And we look in. And when we look in, one eyeball is looking up at us. And he says, I want out of this jug. Here's the problem, Unity folks. How do you get the goose out of the bottle without breaking the bottle or killing the goose? Now again, I'm going to define this as a regular bottle. It is sealed everywhere except for the small opening up at the top. There's a live goose inside. We have to get the goose out of the bottle without breaking that bottle or killing the goose. Do you know how you do it? Okay, everybody listen. Here's how you get the goose out of the bottle without breaking the bottle or killing the goose. You imagine the goose in the bottle, now imagine the goose out of the bottle. Much of our life is that way. We have imagined something the way it is, and therefore we're locked into that imagination of it. Imagination is one of the most powerful tools that a person has to use with God. It is said that a picture is worth 1,000 words. In your mind, it's worth even more than that. Do you realize that your subconscious mind thinks in pictures? It does. Dream-like imagery. When you want to get something fast, don't put it into words, put it into pictures, and it goes immediately into the subconscious mind. I want you to begin to really visualize what you want in your life. There was a man who was a bellhop for a hotel. And this man was ridiculed constantly because underneath the glass top of his bell station as a bellhop, he had pictures of the world's finest hotels. And then in a Unity way, he had an affirmation at the bottom of those pictures. Here's what it said. I am the owner of these hotels. Well, you can imagine the other bellhops just looked at this guy like he was nuts. And yet, he looked at those pictures every day and started to believe that right now, not later, not someday, right now he was the owner of those hotels. And he talked to himself constantly as he was going up the halls carrying bags that I am the manager. I am the owner. I am the controller of the top hotels in the world. In 1933, some top financiers were coming to his hotel, and they were coming to his hotel for one purpose. They were going to interview men for a new position for a new hotel that was going to be opened in New York City. They interviewed 617 applicants, but they kept coming back to one person that personified in consciousness what they were looking for, the bellhop. He was the only one that had the undefinable, the ownership of thinking that he already was what he was seeking. And they hired him during the Great Depression. Being frugal, he saved his money. And during the Great Depression, he bought the first hotel underneath the glass, and then the second, and then the third, and then the fourth. That bellhop by the name of Conrad Hilton. What you can see and believe you can achieve. What you can see in your mind's eye, you can achieve in reality. Now, I want you to listen to this little proof about the difference of words versus what is said verbally. Right now, being trained metaphysicians in this room, I want you to use your full power not to think about a purple hippo. Don't do it. Don't anyone in here think about a purple hippo. I don't want you to think about a purple hippo. I don't want you to think about a purple hippo eating pink grass. Don't think about a purple hippo eating pink grass. And don't think about that purple hippo eating pink grass and having an allergic reaction and breaking out all over himself with white polka dots. Don't do it. Now tonight when you go to bed, there will be a Cecil B. DeMille IMAX movie playing in your mind of a white polka dot purple hippo eating pink grass, because the inner mind thinks in pictures. With your goal sheet, I'm going to ask you to go beyond your written goals and begin with every goal that you have written down on your goal sheet. Work on picturing that in your mind. And second, I'm going to ask you to do what Catherine Ponder would always ask her people to do, make a treasure map, a picture goal sheet of what you want in your life. You're praying for a new car? Get a picture of it and put it up somewhere. If you're praying with this church for the manifestation of that sanctuary, put a picture of it up. Isn't that what they did here? You have to see it and then take ownership of it. And you do it as a community and something larger than yourself, and then you do it in your own individual life. You picture it in your mind first. Then you picture it in reality. Now, how many of you go down Westheimer and notice a new billboard that's up? Do you know that you notice that billboard for about 15 days, then you never see it again? Because your mind has already taken a picture of it. There was one company that very smart, and I've talked about this at seminars across the country, here in Houston, that repainted their billboard every day. You remember that? Every day it'd have a different color on it. Why did they do that? Because you constantly noticed it. I say that was good to a point, and I remember them doing it, but I don't remember the product for the life of me. Do you? So, if your prayer partner lives close by, here is something you're going to do You're going to make a treasure map in the next 30 days, taking your goals and putting pictures up on what you want in your life. And you're going to have your prayer partner move it and even rearrange it. Because if it stays in the same place after like 10, 15 days, you'll never see it again. You have to have it startle you. Now, I love this, and this can be fun. I have one couple that she got up in the middle of the night to get a glass of orange juice, opened the refrigerator, and there was her treasure map. And she just laughed so hard, and she also said that everything on that has manifested. I want you to totally become aware of what you want in mind. What you miss seeing, you miss being. There was a 13-year-old boy in England, and his mother was a metaphysician. And she took this 13-year-old boy that wasn't doing good in school at all, and wasn't doing good in personal relationships either, because he had such a stuttering problem. He couldn't talk to others without stuttering, so therefore he didn't talk. He was a terrible communicator at 13. She took him and she placed him on the front steps of number 10 Downing Street and took his picture, and then had the picture blown up 4 feet by 4 feet, a black and white photo, and put it above the fireplace in the home. Number 10 Downing Street was the Prime Minister's residence. She wrote in red print under the picture, "The Prime Minister of England." Well, this young boy who had the stuttering problem and was doing terrible in school looked at that picture every day and believed that, yeah, he could be prime minister. And his mother believed it without doubt, and Winston Churchill one day did become prime minister. Picturing has a tremendous power. You have to see yourself in it. Now, I'm going beyond just the ordinary treasure map. You said earlier you love to travel. I love to travel too. If I wanted to go to Paris a while back, and so I hung up a poster of Paris, but that's not enough. I had to look at it for a minute and close my eyes and put myself in there, and then spend some time and feel what it would feel like. I went to Paris in my mind before I went there in reality. And the same will come with you. You decide ahead of time where you want to go. There was a man that worked for the government. And in 1915, he rose to a high enough government grade where he got a secretary. In 1915, the secretary that they gave him, a male secretary, was by the name of Louis Howe. And Louis Howe looked at this man, and after a week of working with him, and he said, "You're too good for this." And the man said, "Well, you know, this is what I love doing." He said, No. "You need to become a congressman or a senator. I believe, honestly, you could become president." And Louis Howe said, "Matter of fact, I'm going to stick with you until you do. I'm not going to let you give up until you become president." And here's what this guy said, the boss. He said, "Don't let anybody else tell you, hear you say that. Why, they'll think you're crazy." And he said, "No." He said, "You have greatness." And he kept saying it. Matter of fact, within a week, he was calling his boss, not boss, but Mr. President. The third week that he worked with his boss, he went out and spent his entire paycheck on an expensive bottle of sherry, not to be opened until inaugural night. Boy, that's the kind of faith I want your prayer partner to have in you. This clerk that worked for the government, that rose to a high enough grade to have this male secretary by the name of Louis Howe, his name was Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And Louis Howe believed in the picturing power of the mind. They started to work with FDR and have him picture what it would be to be president. Now, I used to be in broadcasting, folks, and I covered the 1972 presidential campaign, and here's one thing I learned. If you want to be elected president, you have to believe you're already president. That's a huge thing. When you're going for your job, you have to believe you already have it. Nobody's going to give you anything if you go in and say, you know, gee, it'd be awfully nice if you'd give me this job. You know, I don't know how to do it, but golly, you know, if you'd only pay me like $10,000, maybe $15,000, then, you know, slowly I'd get it. You have to go in there with confidence. You say, I can do this. I am the job. You need me more than I need you. You don't say that to them, but you kind of exhibit it in your consciousness. They worked with FDR. When Eleanor came into the picture later on, it was Louis Howe that convinced Eleanor that FDR could be president. Now, please, please, please hear what I'm going to say for the rest of this story. Everything was going fine, and FDR got struck with polio. And he was taken back to the family home. And here's almost an exact quote of his mother talking to him in the bedroom that he grew up in. Mother came in and looked at him and said, Franklin, I want you to stop this nonsense about becoming president. Look at yourself, son. You're nothing more than a miserable cripple. Her words, not mine. You're never going to be anything but an invalid in this bed. Face it, son. Be a man. You're going to have the servants wait on you. Thank goodness we're rich. We can afford this. But this is all you're ever going to have, and you've got to accept this as a man. It so scared Louis Howe and Eleanor that they moved him out of the family home within an hour. And they began to talk to him again and tried to get him to visualize again, and he would shout out in anger. And he'd say, look at me. And of course, he was in severe pain. Pain that I hope that none of us ever see. His body was twisted. He said, I'll never be anything. Mama's right. They kept on working, kept on talking, that the greatness was in his mind, not in his body. It's what he believed that he could achieve, what he could see. And they worked on him and worked on him, and you know now the truth. He never walked again. But he trained himself. He had a man on this side and a man on this side, and it looked like he was walking, but he wasn't. And he stood at the lectern for sometimes a long period of time, training himself with special braces. The public did not know at the time. They do now. And it only makes him a greater man because of what he was able to do. The bottle of sherry was opened, and he was elected president not once, but four times. And it's because of what he saw in his mind and believed, and he didn't allow temporary adversity to stop him. Now, in the beginning of this seminar, I talked about self-worth in the past, where you've been stepped on in the past, but what if you're being stepped on right now? And some of you are. I've had some of you talk to me up here. You're dealing with it right now. First guarantee, there will be a tomorrow. Second guarantee, you're going to come out of this. Third guarantee, you're going to go higher and better than you've ever been before if you'll give yourself the opportunity. And keep on going. Golly, I wish I had time. Well, I'm going to take time. If in the Bible, it talks about plowing a field. Okay? And it talks about looking ahead. They say, you know, if you look behind you, if you look down at the plow, you're not fit. This is highly paraphrased, to be a farmer. Yeah, it's close enough. That's the way I always did it in church. It's close enough. Okay, so if you talk to any of the old farmers, if you put a mule up there, even though the mule knows the path, if you're in control of that plow and you look behind you, if I look over at you, Sharon, you know where that plow goes? It goes right here. It's unbelievable. It's where you're looking. If you look behind you, it becomes erratic and stops altogether. If you look down at the furrow you're trying to plow, it is very jagged. There is only one way. You have to look beyond the horizon. That whole verse is talking about goal setting. You cannot look to a temporary pothole in your life. And all of us have had potholes. I've constantly had potholes, even since starting this ministry. I was blocked for a year and a half by AOL. That's a pothole, let me tell you. So, you look beyond the horizon when you're unblocked by AOL, and then great things can happen. All right, what am I talking about? Here's what I'm talking about. When you pray, you believe you've already received. Picture completed results. Very rarely in our prayers do we do that. We say, God, I have a problem. If you could only help me, I don't know how to get out of the muck and mire, and I'm sinking fast. And whoa, God, it's scary down here. Please help, God. Please, 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 please. And we want the divine crane to come, and sometimes it does. That's grace. But the Jesus Christ method of prayer is to picture completed results. So on your goal sheet, you're going to picture completed results. Everything's already completed. Mary has her Rolls Royce. She's driving it. Listen, it is just as easy to manifest a Rolls Royce as it is a Dodge Neon, I swear. I know what I'm talking about. As long as you can believe it. If you watch the Biography Channel, going back to your example, and you watch about these millionaires that have gone bankrupt, within a few months they're millionaires again, or a year at the out, it's all they know. A person finds the level that they're socially conditioned for. If you're middle class, you can have bad times, but then you'll be middle class again. What's hard is to go beyond that. And there's only one way, and that is to redo your mind. And then when others are screaming at you like the crabs, saying, come on back down. The weather's fine down at this level. What are you doing up there? You keep on climbing. That's the scariest thing that you ever do as a human being. When everybody, family and friends, are back down here, there's only one way. You climb with God. Because when you apply for that job that's bigger than anything you've ever done in your whole life, you're going to say, who am I? I'm not equipped. Yes, you are. You have the mind of a genius inside of you that will think in you as you need it, when you need it. The next thing that I'm going to ask you to do, this is one of the few things that's not written down on one of the sheets that I have back here. I want you daily over the next 30 days to have an exercise of picturing yourself differently. What would you do? There are three questions here and they're not written down. What would you do if you weren't doing what you're doing? What would you do if you weren't doing what you're doing? Especially men, they are so defined by their jobs that when they're laid off or something, they completely lose their identity. What would you do if you weren't doing what you're doing? Second question, where would you live if you weren't living where you're living? And the third question, what would you do with your life if there weren't any excuses, no present ties, responsibilities, or duties? What would you do if there weren't any excuses, no present ties, responsibilities, or duties? I want you for a moment to picture yourself differently. I was in a small church, and we went out to eat afterwards at a restaurant. We ordered pie, and we were discussing, and kind of a lot of people were playing like devil's advocate and saying, you know, I don't think, a lot of the folks said that a person, a human being, has the trouble with change that you say. And what I did next, God told me to do. Literally, I could have never thought up something like this. We all ordered pie, and here's what I did. Instead of eating the pie in the normal way from the point into the crust, I turned it around and started to eat the crust first and in towards the point. It was not 2 seconds before the waitress was over, looking down in a very serious way and saying, what's wrong with the pie? Whispering. And I said, oh, nothing. I said, it's the greatest pie I've ever had. I love this pie. But again, it's not my verbal words. It's what she was seeing with her eyes. And I talked to her for a minute, and she said, let me get you another piece of pie. I said, no, no, no. I want this pie. I love this pie. She said, no, no. Let me, please, you know, I'll get you another piece of pie. I said, I've already eaten like one-third of the... Oh, that's all right. Any flavor you want. Just let me get you another piece of pie. I said, no, I insist. I want to keep this pie. Love eating it this way. So in a minute later, she was back. She said, sir, I've talked to the manager, and we want to apologize for the pie. And, you know, you don't have to be a nice person. You know, we're willing to give you anything you want, you know, if you'd like another piece of pie or whatever. And I said the same thing. Oh, I love this pie, wonderful pie. Pretty soon the manager's over. And he says, sir, I hear that there's a problem with the pie. You don't have to eat that pie. I said, no, I love this pie. And I ate it down to the very last point of the point. When I was leaving, going up to the cash register, she shouted from the other side of the restaurant, sir, sir, I didn't charge you for the pie. So if you ever want free pie, that could be your first prosperity demonstration from this seminar. There was a lady that was praying to meet the payroll of her company. She was doing her process, praying that she could make payroll, but you know how it is when you're being stepped on right now, you're dealing with the current pain. And she would pray and do what she needed to do, but still it was the constant thing coming, you know, how am I going to make payroll? How am I going to pay these people come Friday? She was praying and believing in a miracle, seeing and picturing completed results of massive amount of money coming into her company. And here's what happened. There was a man came in and talked to one of her employees at the front counter and said, I'm an attorney and I'm interested in buying that piece of property over there on the corner. And the woman came out and said, oh, gee, I wish I owned that piece of property. That's worth millions. If I owned that, I wouldn't have any problems. And he's looking down here and he says, well, according to the deed, you do own it. And so she called her attorney that afternoon, and it turns out that her father, years and years and years before, bought it for her just in case she ever ran into problems. She sold it that day and was worth over $3.5 million. Not living your life to pay bills. Payment of debts and receiving payments. This is something that I hear more testimonies on than any other part of this seminar. People getting out of debt. And I'm going to give you two handouts, and this is really going to test the handout people, because they're going to be back to back. This is a handout on becoming debt-free and paying all your debts. You're going to write down your current debts, and you're going to do the prayer and do it on a daily basis. The payment of all your debts, and the second part of the handout, oh, you're way ahead of me. It is the first one? Okay, good. The payment of all your debts and receiving payment for what is owed to you. Prosperity is debt-free. When you say the Lord's Prayer, and you do it here every Sunday, I want you to listen to it, especially next Sunday when you're singing it. Do you realize that there is only one line that requires action by you in the Lord's Prayer? It is, "Forgive me my debts as I also have forgiven my debtors." I'm going to repeat that. And that's past tense. Forgive in the original form. Forgive me my debts as I also have forgiven my debtors. Now, what does that mean? Forgive me my debts as I also have forgiven my debtors. Am I supposed to tomorrow morning call MasterCard and say, "Hello, MasterCard. Yes, this is Chris Chenoweth. I've just become a born-again Christian. Are you a Christian?" Oh, that's good. Well, you know what the Lord's Prayer says. The Lord's Prayer says that you're supposed to forgive my debts. And I've chosen not to pay you. This isn't what it means at all. It means that you're going to release the burden of debt. Part of our reason for extreme debt and frozenness about it, like a deer on the railroad tracks, is because of our imagination about it, like the goose in the bottle. Oh, Lord, I'll never pay this. Oh, I have to pay Sears again. Why, they're zapping, sucking the life out of my soul. And that type of thing just freezes that into a permanent debt. We have decreed that. We've seen the completed results, and the completed results are disaster. You see what I'm talking about here? You begin to see yourself out of debt. You begin to release the tremendous burden from your back and work on this on a daily basis. The debtor's prison, according to Charles Fillmore, is of your own making. A thought of debt produces lack. Clearing up the debts in mind clears up the debt in the outer. You forgive, release the debt, and you affirm abundance. Now, going to get a little heavy on you here just for a minute. Take what you can. Forgive us our debts as we also have forgiven our debtors. One idea must be dissolved in mind before another can take its place. More bills can be paid this way than any other. To remedy any state of limited finances that have been brought about by worry and fear, you must begin by forgiving the worry and fear that is the original cause. You must free your mind from the burden of the debt before the debt can be paid. In other words, in mind, you take control of that debt. This does not mean you disclaim owing any creditors money or try to evade payment of obligations that you have incurred. The thing denied is the burden, the heavy burden of debt and lack. Two more right here. Go ahead, ask me a question. I'm waiting. I want to pass out the other sheet, but I don't want to confuse.
Forgive yourself of the worry of death.
Forgive means release. And what I'm talking about here, no one's ever asked that question before, and that's good. I'm talking about forgiving the debt. It is a releasing of the debt. And what this means is that instead of saying every time you look at that in your gut saying, oh, I hate this. Why, with this interest rate, I'll never pay this off. And look what's happening to your mind and your subconscious mind saying, yep, 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 that's the way it is. It'll never change. You begin to release that idea and you say, with God, you know, your history. It's not going to have any power over me anymore. I, as I said, receive more testimonies on that sheet than any other. The highest debt that I know of that people have reported back to me has been over $527,000 that they got out of. And not through bankruptcy, folks, through miracles. God can pay anything. And just let it happen. But if you freeze up and tense, you can't let it through. You just can't. You got to become wide open. Now I got the second sheet right away afterwards. This is receiving payment. Now, some people say, but nothing's owed to me. That's good if that's the case. But if you do have something owed to you, then you need to do this sheet. You need to have a sense of letting it come. Now, let me tell you a true story about this. There was a woman by the name of Lily. Now, when I give a real name, she wanted me to use her name in this. She was the owner of Terry's Creative Photography. And here's what she said to me during the seminar. She said in a cynical way, even though I had already given the rule about cynical thinking, she said from the fourth row, she said, now, Chris, you're saying that if I do this sheet, I can receive payment for what is owed to me? She said, do you realize that I'm the top wedding photographer in this town? And I did a wedding back in 1994, and that couple owes me $4,000, and I think about that every single night. You know what I said to her? So be it. Hear what she just said. She might as well have said, a couple owes me $4,000, and I'm praying that it will remain the same, and I think about it every night. She started to do this sheet, and within the first week, here's the telephone call that I got. Chris, is that you? Chris, you're never going to believe what happened. Out of the blue, this family contacted me and ordered $5,000 of wedding photos. If anybody is in the wedding business, do you know how unusual that is after all these years? And that was the year 2000. It was the first time they could get through. It's as if the connection was stopped. You will be shocked and amazed as you do this sheet and the prayers what you will have coming to you. Do you have judgments? Do you have lawsuits? Do you have child support? Alimony. I'll tell you, it works every time when you work it. If you have the thought that anyone has wronged you and they owe you something, your dominant seed thought is owing, debt, and you wear the clothes of your thought. And this blocks the cleansing power of God. It can't get in, the richness of spirit. Until you cast out the thought of the wrong by forgiving first. Debt is a thought of lack with absence at both ends. You need to fill your mind with thoughts of all sufficiency. And where there is no lack, there can be no debt. Now, what is going to happen to many of you as you begin this process is people are going to look at you in a new way. I constantly hear this. They're going to look at you and they're going to turn around. They're going to say, what have you done different? Have you changed your hair? Do you have a new suit on? What's different about you? And you're going to say, nothing. But there is something different. Emerson says, what you are speaks so loud I can hardly hear your words. And you have put on a new consciousness. And there was one woman, and her name was Mary. She lived in Corpus Christi, Texas, and she went to work, and her employer kept walking by her and looking at her and walked by her again and looked at her and finally said, Mary, would you come into my office? And he didn't even really realize what he was doing. He says, I don't know why I'm doing this, but I just feel guided. Mary, have you ever received a 25% raise before? And she said, well, no, I can't think I have. And he said, well, you just have. That happened during the seminar. Well, that will happen to many of you, that type of thing, because you're becoming a new person. You spend the time with these sheets and these prayers. Now, I'm handing you out a lot of sheets. I'm going to tell you about another typical phone call. Chris, you're asking me to do all these sheets every day? Why, Chris, that's impossible. Why, that would take every waking minute of every day for the next 30 days. Yes. You're going to live 30 days anyway. Why not invest it in an experiment in spirituality to see what you can become? Yes, it's going to be tough, because you're turning yourself inside out. But boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, is it worth the journey. As you keep on climbing and you have those crabs that are pulling at you, trying to pull you down, you need to keep climbing with God. This is the second time that I've said this. It's because this is the number one experience that people have that do the process, is they will start to achieve incredible success, but they will be torn in their soul with friendships and family. Should they go on? Should they continue? Now, I've got my hand up here. Some of you are going to receive the greatest job offers in your life, but it's going to be like in Seattle, Washington. It's not going to be down the street. And you have to make a choice. I would urge you, you know, in living your life, in doing all that you do, to at least highly consider it before you turn it down. To not turn it down just flat and say, no, can't do that. I have to live within a radius of 3 miles. You have to be willing to go beyond who you are. The biggest thing is you have to be willing to accept. Isn't that what it's about? Accept more for you. And believe that you can have it. And that is the hardest thing for prosperity. And we go back to point number one, it's self-worth.